There are 29 men that think they are ready for the Royal Rumble, but yet there is only one snake that is absolutely sure what he's got to do. You see, I see a lot of men sweating. Not me. I'm cold, brother. Ice water running through the veins. You see, Rick Martel, I know what I got to do. Like a surgeon, brother, I will cut my way through those 29 men to get to you.
The 29 pots have been dug. The Undertaker will bury all 29 opponents. And the only thing the other 29 competitors will be doing tomorrow is...
resting in peace.
As I've always said, it's not what you do, but how you look doing it. You know, and just watch me shine when I throw everybody over that top rope. Oh, yeah, and Jake, I haven't forgot about you. I know the way things look for you lately. You need a little guidance. So it'll be my pleasure to guide you right out of that ring because I'm the winner of that Royal Rumble.
It's Royal Rumble time! Every man for himself! And the old tugboat is going to jump right into the middle of things! And Holster... if it comes down to you and me, well,
Oh, people ask me, am I ready for the Royal Rumble? Well, you're darn right I am, because when everybody's out of the ring, it could be me and, of course, my partner. Well, you know something? You take a look at this face. I hope it's me and you, because I'm gonna win!
Yeah, Master of the Universe, yeah! Lord and Master of the Scourge Circle, the one person that everyone can say, everyone can agree, that is tougher than anybody else, yeah. And he has the magnitude, and he has the power to, go into a Royal Rumble. Free and easy, yeah, loosey-goosey, bang-bang, tight at the same time. Royal Rumble royalty, Macho King Randy Savage, I will not be denied. No, I'll be famous and infamous in the same night. Oh, yeah.
Your lips.
Welcome to OSW Review.
The Gay Sex Podcast.
As it can't see,
all right.
Fancy heading to Blue Oyster right. Later. The old school wrestling video podcast, filmed in glorious grapple vision and encoded with blast processing, we chronologically critique the Hulkamania era pay-per-view by pay-per-view. And tonight on tap, we've got a tall, frosty glass of the 1991 Royal Rumble. God, we're back again. Brothers, sisters, everybody sing.
Everybody.
This is your host, Jay Hunter. And joining me, as ever, are royalty-free facsimiles of the Transformers. It's Optimus Prime, V1.
Nice.
And our very own Negatron, Mr. Odyssey.
Good.
1991, year of the awesome video games. So on PC, we had Lemmings. In the arcade, Street Fighter 2. On the Sega Master System, or the Sega Mega Drive, we got Sonic the Hedgehog, and we got Super Mario World for the SNES.
Oh, fuck.
In the music charts, Guns N' Roses released Use Your Illusion 2. Vanilla Ice peaked with Ice Ice Baby, and The Simpsons followed up Do the Bartman with two terrible singles.
And the best album ever, Pearl Jam 10.
Never mind. A cold open as Sean Mooney welcomes us to the 3 hours of back alley excitement. He runs down the card and says, beside the Miami Arena, the gentle swaying of the palms belie the fury about to be unleashed.
What?
Yeah, I didn't get that.
Yeah, I take it that was a Coliseum home video exclusive.
Thank God, yeah.
Was this the version you watched, Jay?
Yep, the Coliseum home video, Silver Vision version.
I'm just looking at the running time on the version he had to watch.
Oh, what is it?
2.5 hours.
Oh, you're a concrete.
It's like 2:40. What was yours?
It's like 3:15.
Yeah.
Oh, it passed 3 hours.
Yeah.
This is my fault. There is a good reason for that. Something I only found out afterwards is that I have a match cut from my version.
You lucky boy.
It reminds me of the 89 Rumble where I didn't get to see Race and Haku.
Oh, my heart bleeds for you. I still have nightmares about that fucking match.
This pay-per-view opens up with the US national anthem, and that will set the tone for the rest of the pay-per-view.
No, WrestleMania is America the Beautiful.
That's very correct. Our version opened with a US flag. USA! Yeah, a flag flapping in the wind in utter silence for at least 20 seconds.
Alright then. Vince gives us another throat-burning stormer. A spoiler alert introduction of the Rumble participants. Of note, Rhett gets second billing behind Hulk. And we have newcomers Sabatimba, the British Bulldog, Shane Douglas, and one half of the Nasty Boys, Brian Knobbs.
Bulldog's not a newcomer.
Well, he left for 2 years.
Ah, he's like, okay, fair enough.
One half of the Nasty Boys, Brian Knobbs. The other half was busy jobbing out Sam Houston in a tag match. Who cares? It's January 19, 1991, in the Miami Arena in Miami, Florida. Announcers tonight are Gorilla Monsoon and Roddy Piper. And we have a 16,000 sellout in the arena and 440,000 televisions tuned in on pay-per-view at home. The live gate brought in a nice packet of $210,000.
We didn't have Vince roam down the card in their version.
Aww.
We had Mean Gene, who ran down the card, both to make up. We had the reintroduction of sex jazz music.
That's true.
Yeah, I marked out to that one.
Is this kind of like the WrestleMania 2 music? Kind of
yeah.
Like the Nile era music.
Yes, it is.
Do you know that nobody was really that impressed about the national anthem being sung?
Mm.
It was almost kind of like they're, oh, fuck's sake, here we go again. But as you say, it was a real theme of the evening, this America thing. You know?
Yeah.
And, sorry, I'm struggling to breathe. Yeah, move on.
The opening bout, it's the Orient Express with Mr. Fuji versus Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty, the Rockers. What's happened to Sato here?
Oh, I had Kato written down. No, it was Kato.
You are right, it was Sato. But instead we got the Japanese Patriot. Some roidy masked man. Now, who could that be?
I assume he's not Japanese.
He was a large Westerner, I can tell you that much. Yeah. Anyway.
Didn't look like he was Japanese. So can we have a guess?
You can surely can, yeah.
Well, would you know him? Like?
No, I don't think so. Like, I don't know.
Well, there's no point guessing.
Who's this masked fella? He asked. He replaced Akio Sato, who left to wrestle in Japan. So, Kato, you yellow swine, appeared alongside Tanaka on the 22nd December Superstars. It's Paul Diamond, who's no relation to Simon. So the former AWA tag team Bad Company are reunited here in the WWF as the Orient Express 2.0. So you might know him better as 1992's Maximilian Moon, better known as Max Moon.
Hold on, I thought Max Moon was Conan.
Yeah. Yes, it was supposed to be Conan, but he actually left the WWF before he could debut a gimmick. And they've got this, like, expensive, stupid get-up, and it's like, which one of you Roidy fucks is closest to Conan? Here you go, Paul. There you go.
Holy shit. Max Moon.
I thought Max Moon was awesome. Like, didn't he have his jetpack?
Yeah.
Was it a real jetpack?
Well, it...
Cause, no.
Well, it didn't actually fly, but, you know, it's...
Oh, he just jumped.
Like the hurricane. Like. Oh, it had, what do you call it? The CO2 coming out the back of it and that, you know?
Yeah.
Is this gimmick that he's actually from the moon?
He's a millionaire from the moon.
So that's why he has his jetpack, so he can fly down to work every Monday.
Yeah, it's about time to bring it up. October 30th, we had the title change that never was, where the Rockers beat the Hart Foundation on a house show, but the top rope broke, so they never aired it, pledging just to reshoot it later. Sean claims that Brett was politicking, but that's bullshit, because Anvil left, but he resigned, and they just said, oh, fuck it, and left it at that.
Shame.
It would have been nice to get a title belt on the resume. So, a fast-paced opener starts off hot as the Rockers take control. Good old Pat takes charge with a lovely exploding flying forearm. It was awesome. Speciously, deafening USA chants fill the arena, start and stop really quickly, so it sound piped in. There's a miscommunication spot by the Orient Express, and they kind of do the, oh, me so sorry.
They frap at the dicky.
Is that racist if you get a Japanese guy to do that? Obviously here, Paul Diamond's not Japanese.
Do real Japanese people do that shit?
Yeah.
Then it's not racist.
Oh, well, good.
There we go.
All right.
Clearly I'm wrong on this. Because I'm a cunt, but...
Some excellent tag team choreography from the Rockers. First ever moonsault by Sean, a reverse double atomic drop, and double splash to the outside.
Which was... kind of mistimed. Sean jumped too late again. Remember, like, the double dropkick on the boss man a couple of months ago?
Mm. The heels distract the ref, and they teeter Sean half out of the ring, and Fuji whacks him with the cane in the supposed throat. The match quality is surprisingly great with the new Orient Express, Pat Tanaka with some sweet offense, like super kicking Sean over the top ropes back into the ring. They don't look like evil heel jobbers anymore. They actually look competent and... You could, well, you're not going to, but you could win.
Pat, I thought he was awesome. I thought he wrestled far better than he looked like he could. It's like a...
Morishima?
Yes, I'm spot on.
Is that what you were going for?
I was actually going to say super crazy, because he's like a kind of fat Mexican, but he's really awesome. He's like a little jumping bean.
So he's not lazy Mexican?
No, not at all.
Did you know that most of our listeners are American?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Okay. Oh, no, I didn't, but I'd imagine. Kind of half Irish, half American. Maybe a few Brits thrown in there.
Because we spend a lot of time slagging off Yanks.
I'd imagine if they're intelligent Yanks, they'd agree with us.
And we can't go back to our own country because we're here.
Tanaka had a headlock on Sean. And I thought Piper did really, really well in pointing out that a headlock in general will never make a person tap out or quit. But what it does is that it wears them down so that it makes it easier for you later on in the match to get that pin. So I thought Piper was really, really good on commentary for getting things like that across.
Or, so instead of going for the win, I'm just going to wear you down. Why don't you go for some kind of submission move to finish the match there and then? How much more difficult would it be to put on a submission move as a headlock?
Because maybe he's too fresh and you just kick out immediately. Maybe
why do you can... kick out of the headlock?
You have to get worn down first, and then you can power out of it.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot.
Honourable Japanese know-how prevails until they try to clothesline Michaels with Fuji's belt, but in a classic 80s spot, Sean jumps into the belt and the heels knock into each other. This buys Sean just enough time to get the hot tag to Marty. Sean doesn't bother tagging back into the ring to do the double superkick spot, but the heels take control. There's an awesome finish as Marty is slingshotted over a keeled over Pat and gets a sunset flip 4-3 at 19-14.
Yeah, the finish was brilliant.
The finish was amazing.
Yeah. Poetry in motion. This match, headlocks. I'm amazed. Did you like this match?
I thought the match was... amazing. I thought this was really
I loved this match as well, yeah.
For in-ring action, I thought this was definitely the best tag team match we've seen so far. Maybe even stunned. One of the better matches.
I am stunned. I thought this match was absolutely awful. Rest hold after rest hold. With a little bit of action, rest hold, rest hold, rest hold. A nice little spot, rest hold. I think it was one of the worst tag matches we've seen since 1985 or whatever.
I have the exact opposite opinion. I absolutely loved this match. I do understand the formula. What you're saying is that they'd have lots of choreographed tag team spots, and then they go into rest hold, have a bit of a chat, then repeat over. But I thought it was fantastic. I have a theory about why you don't like the match. It's because Marty wasn't in it. It was all Sean this match.
Yeah, okay.
He was
yeah.
like, man, I didn't get a proper go at this SummerSlam, yeah. So it's like, this is all me.
If Marty was in the whole thing, I might have liked it a little bit.
Of course you would have.
It's certainly the worst Rockers match I've seen, because I'm used to this exploding out of the blocks, high flying moves left, right and centre. We got a couple of nice kind of tag team moves, but we didn't get anything really exciting, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm a bit shocked about
that. I
really loved it.
I'm shocked, because I think I made a note of, I can't wait to hear Steve bang on about how much he loves this match. It's very rare. It's
the opposite yeah. side of the spectrum, really.
Mm. Usually you disagree with us.
Cinematography.
I'm still right on that.
Shut up.
The only thing I had a problem with, and it's something about what you were saying, you know, with the headlocks and the kind of middle portion got a bit slow. I had no problem with that in general, except I thought it was backwards because it was the faces getting the heat on the heels with interspersed comebacks. I thought if they had flipped that, it would have made the match even better. But otherwise, I thought this match was fucking great, and I thought there were some lovely moves.
I think the difference is with Viva, because we love this match and you don't, is that you're looking at the rest spots, but we're looking at the tag team tandem offense spots and kind of resting when they're doing the rest spots. So it's like there's five or six choreographed spots, and then it's a rest in between. But you're looking at the rest spots and yeah. other stuff in between.
I go with that. I think it's interesting that we disagree so much.
It's very rare.
It's the opposite yeah. side of the spectrum, really.
Mm, this match would still hold up in 2012. If you put this match on a pay-per-view today, I think fans would still go, yeah, that was really good. So
I think they'd be blown away by the number, just the sheer amount of tandem tag team offenses here.
Two people doing two people moves on people.
Stop saying people. It looks like Fuji gives Kato a little poke up the bum with his cane to get Kato to run in and break up the hot tie.
I totally missed it.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of looked like a bit of...
I have to mention that the Orange Express and the Rockers, this is like a return match from WrestleMania 6.
That's the match with the Marty bump.
Yeah, the bop. The Marty bop and the bump. Yeah. And that was a pile of shite, if I remember right. And I do, because it's shite. And this is like... And this is like 10 times the match this was. And you could tell this is like Sean and Marty sat down, wrote out these spots, made these guys learn it, and there it is for everyone to see. Fantastic.
The last show was the show where I saw Sean had overtaken Marty and you were having none of it. What's your view on now?
Yeah, I think at this point he's starting to come to the fore, unfortunately. But... he's certainly getting a much bigger crowd reaction, and he always kind of has, but it's really he's starting to take off.
Yeah. Marty's selling in this match was fine. There was no stupid smiling or non-selling a move, so just two gorilla thumbs up.
So we get an immediate cut to backstage with Macho Madness and Sean Mooney. Macho says Slaughter promised him a title shot if he wins tonight, and Sherry's about to bait Warrior into doing the same. There was a really nice, we're live, but we're watching something else on the monitor backstage. Like, we're privy to this Macho segment, and it's not part of the pay-per-view.
I was wondering why Slaughter agreed to give Macho a title shot. What's in it for him?
I think it's probably like a clever tactic to seem like a fighting champion, but to dodge Hogan.
Ooh, I like it. I really like that. Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
Excellent. So here we go. We've waited 8 episodes for this promo by Sherry Martel, who I thought looked very pretty without her cat makeup.
This is the promo you're always banging on about.
Yeah, this is it.
Promo was fucking horrendous.
Terrible.
Are you serious? Yeah. This is like the greatest women's promo
her
in wrestling
history. Her
greatest
promo when the build up to the Hogan Savage. Yeah. I thought this was horrific.
The Zeus stuff.
Yeah. So you know, with all the cauldrons, I thought that was amazing.
No, I was blown away by this. She carried this segment, and she got all the heat, and then she gave the heat to Warrior, who did absolutely nothing. Unbelievable. See, this is how it is normally. So, she decides the best way to cajole Warrior is attacking his honour and bravery. Warrior comes out in an America racing jacket and matching USA face paint and tights. I have to say, that is a crock of shit. Like, if you're going to be American, you have to be pro-America from the start. Mm. Hulk Hogan, Jim Duggan, Dwayne Gill, all huge Americans from the start. You can't just suddenly, when it suits you and when you think you can hand it to the crowd, suddenly I'm American.
Yeah.
Doesn't work.
Nope.
Unless you're Polish.
And if you're a Polish midget, you can pretend to be Irish.
Sherry changes tact, feigning attraction, putting on the charm, unzipping and taking off Warrior's jacket, complimenting him to his wonderful face, and steals a kiss.
To what end?
Woo him successfully, that he will agree to whatever she says, i.e. give Macho Man a title shot.
But then, surely Warrior then will be thinking, oh no, she's only tricking me because she obviously still loves Macho Man because she wants me to drop my title to Macho Man. Or is Warrior just too stupid to realise?
I think that's what she thought.
She's not right, though. Maybe she...
Well, no, because it didn't work.
Well, maybe she didn't do a good enough job.
She tried.
Oh, that's the most wonderful, the most thrilling thing that has ever happened to me. Please, as I look into your wonderful face, and I know the champion that you are and the honorable man that you are, I know that you would grant the Macho King his title shot. Come on, Warrior. Are you going to grant the Macho King a title match? Come on, Warrior. Tell everybody what an honorable man that you are. What a brave and wonderful champion you are, Warrior. What is it to you? Come on. Aren't you going to give the Macho King his title match? Just say yes to me. That's all I want from you. That is all I want from you, Warrior.
Massive cheer that went up when she got on her knees.
Exactly. This is fantastic. Extremely suggestive as well, especially for 1991's PG. Hear that, Triple H? She cut this 8-minute promo all of herself. Warrior's doing nothing. He doesn't even have to react. And then...
Hold on, Jay. She cut a 30-second promo that she dragged out to 8 minutes.
But, like, you can't woo someone in 30 seconds, like.
No, but she just kept repeating herself over and over again. She only had a certain amount of words, and maybe Warrior left her out there far too long, or maybe his cue was when she went down on her knees. I don't know, I just think it was completely fucked, the whole thing.
Anyway, the segment finishes when Warrior spazzes out and shouts, "No!" and gets a huge pop from the crowd. Thank you, Sherry Martel. Look at him. That's what a manager does, is that she caught a 10-minute promo and gave all the heat to the Ultimate Warrior, and that's all people remember.
Warrior not agreeing to a title shot is very cowardly. Why wouldn't he agree to the title shot? He's, you know, a big fighting champion. He's scared of no one.
That's very true.
I think it's a...
No answer for that.
Yes in general, but no to your wooing.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But yeah. You guys hated this segment.
Hated it.
I thought this was really fucking bad. Nowhere near as bad as, like, you know, a Brother Love segment or something, but... I felt awkward watching it. Like, I felt bad for her because I thought it was going so badly. Uncomfortable, almost. Awful segment.
Oh, that's a shame. Well, the crowd enjoyed it. They edited up, and they... Never mind. This country. Davin's Boy, The Barbarian, with Bobby Heenan versus The Big Boss Man.
I don't know, maybe a name change for The Big Boss Man now. He's nowhere near as big as he was. Yeah, he's still losing more weight. He's in, like, amazing shape at the moment. So congratulations, Boss Man.
So it's Boobs versus The Bosom Man. Cheers, ready? Barbarian has an awesome trow rug and antler hat. Oh, what a gimmick.
Is his antler hat better than Seamus's antler hat?
His Loki hat?
Like. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, of course it is.
So to build up to this match, Bossman's new goal is to knock off Perfect and take his Intercontinental belt. But Heenan says you'll have to go through the entire Heenan family first. So with Rude gone, he eliminated Haku at the Survivor Series, and here's your next task. Defeat the Barbarian.
I'm fine with that for a mid-card storyline.
That's fine. This pay-per-view, more than any other we've watched, was severely lacking in promo packages. There was not one.
Mm-hmm.
Not one, not even for the title
match. The title match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really needed them.
Bossman does the "I've got your cape" stalling tactics to kick us off. Bossman's shirt immediately pops open.
It's like ding ding ding.
So we get an eternal bear hug spot. That is this match. We get a lovely twinkle toes spot as Barbie is out of position and gets to the ropes with only the tips of his fingers. Yeah, so this is like a hoss big man match. So it's like big moves, top rope, clothesline, jumping pile driver, that kind of thing. And tea breaks in between.
And a little bit of rope dope from the Barbarian at the start. This nice. Fucking state of it. Boss Man's feet pull a big dirty Andre and he gets caught up in the ropes for like about 5 minutes. He's trying to like free himself. I hate that shit. It just makes wrestlers look like idiots, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Did you also notice that the Boss Man bites Barbarian right in front of the fucking ref and nothing. Referee doesn't care. The match goes on.
But it must be legal if the law is doing it.
Maybe, yeah.
The Boss Man rolls through a top rope crossbody and gets the 3 and the win at 10:04.
Barbarian, he was going up to the top rope quite a lot. There's almost some kind of heel face switcheroo here. Although, yeah, I'm pretty impressed with Barbarian being able to have that kind of agility.
I thought Barbarian gassed out in about 40 seconds. I thought he was shite. I thought this match for the opening, like, minute or two was pretty shit. But by the end, fairly decent, you know. The finish of the match was pretty good as well.
It reminds me of the last few shows we've done where Earthquake would get up on the top rope against Hogan and Rude would get up, scale the cage, and come down on Warrior. So maybe it's like only stupid people go on the top row. And heels are stupid.
Maybe, actually.
Hard cut to fans' predictions about the WWF title match tonight. They all say the Warrior. Actually, one of the kids just says Warrior's going to defend the belt.
He's 100% right, though.
Yeah, he did. One thing he can count on. The match will occur.
Yeah, we didn't get that.
We had a promo by General Adnan and Sergeant Slaughter. I was like, my God, this promo is awful.
Oh, you maggots, the ultimate puke.
The ultimate puke.
I'm going to beat the ultimate puke.
The ultimate puke.
Become the ultimate champion, blah, 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 blah.
By the end of the promo, it wasn't that bad. It actually turned it around and made sense of it by the end of it. Yeah.
It's just that he uses the ultimate puke.
Ultimate puke.
Cheesy and the gimmick and
but I do love your impression.
It's like our only impression that isn't JR. So not only is he anti-US, he's pro-Iraq. He tells the ultimate puke.
Ultimate puke.
His seconds are numbered and is dismissed. So with Gene, Warrior retorts, shouting about foxholes and the warriors that ride upon his back.
There was an element of typical Warrior promo crap, but this was probably his most coherent promo up to now. I'll take that.
Okay.
He wasn't talking about elder gods and beaming to satellites on Earth. He was talking about good old Tommy's fighting the fight and waving flags. Crock of shit.
I think I'm just bored of him now. It's the same thing every promo. He doesn't really have a character or a reason for doing anything, so like you can't get behind him, root for him, because he's all powerful, he's awesome, he's a champion, he's the best.
I think you were there about 5-6 episodes
ago.
We've caught up.
Absolutely. Yes, Steve, you were head of the curve on this one. It was during this promo that I said to myself, I am done with Warrior, I've had enough, I'm ready for a change.
Let me tell you about a Sergeant Slaughter. He should be Santa Slaughter. He's been a busy boy, and wait, it's only good boys get presents. What do bad boys get?
A bag of coal.
Okay.
Or a bag of ashes and other countries.
Jesus.
Yeah.
At SummerSlam, Sergeant Slaughter gave Brother Love the Great American Award, and at the Survivor Series, he eliminated three men before getting DQ'd, i.e. not jobbing, and he debuted his new manager, General Adnan Al-Qasi, a retired Iraqi pro wrestler, and had been receiving special gifts from Saddam Hussein. The most prized of which was a pair of point-tipped wrestling boots, which he received on the 29th of December, which was his equivalent of Macho Man's loaded purse.
And they are fucking cool.
So awesome.
They're awesome, yeah.
So come the 15th of December on Superstars, he was announced, Jack Tunney said it, he is the number one contender, and here we are.
Just cause?
You are the nicest heel. You also gave me an American award. Therefore, you are the least American person I know. Therefore, you will face the most American.
And that's what we'll do.
Warriors, he rips the Iraq flag. And stuffs it in Sergeant Slaughter's mouth.
I don't think that's okay to desecrate another country's flag, regardless of whether you're at war with them or not.
Yeah, yeah.
Really disgraceful, actually.
Extremely offensive, all right.
I totally see your point, and, you know, flags are sacred to a lot of people, and they shouldn't be, but, you know, it's not real.
I think it's worse because this is a real war, and you're using this for heat, as opposed to a fake war with Canada, which you can enjoy.
I think when you put it that way, I totally see the point, actually. More people might die because of this kind
of thing. Yeah, yeah, there's always that chance, actually.
Yeah.
Warrior absolutely demolishes Slaughter, and it looked like he was just going to, you know, 3 minutes, one and done. Until Sherry, who changed into a nice, shiny black dress, comes to ringside and tries to trip Warrior, getting him to leave the ring and try to catch her. The trap works, the spring is sprung, and out of nowhere, Savage blindsides Warrior and scrambles to attack him.
Savage's attack on Warrior was one of the most intense attacks I've ever seen. It's like, so vicious about it, I thought he was amazing. And then to make it better, he didn't fucking pose and make it look all fake, and then booted out of there. He was gone. There was no one catching him.
He's quicker than a whippet with a bum full of dynamite.
Piper made a great point as he was walking down to the ring. He says that as much as I hate Sergeant Slaughter and what he believes in and how he's turned, but you have to respect his opinion, because this is America and you can do what you want in America and you can believe what you want in America. Watching that in 2012 is pretty fucking funny.
It all made sense then, what was going on earlier in the pay-per-view with Slaughter is giving me a title shot. Warrior doesn't agree to the title shot. Therefore, I'm going to attack Warrior to get my title shot. Very smart. Quite a nice, concise, all within the same pay-per-view. Happy.
And Sherry's legs looked great in the new dress.
And as she ran away, there was a nice bit of side boob.
I was just about to say that. Excellent. Well done.
Eat last!
What are the chances, right? In all of the wrestling we've watched, this happens to be the one slow 10 count in WWF history. What are the chances?
Pretty good.
Fair enough.
Slaughter distracts the ref from seeing and counting to 10. Thank God. Warrior returns to the ring, limping to the ring.
Are you allowed to break up a 10 count? Can the referee not just say, I remember the number I was on, mister?
He was just like, when the ref would put up his hand, he's like, no.
This is like a...
Yo.
You can see where it's coming.
You could legitimately break the 10 count and make him start again if Sergeant Slaughter left the ring.
That's true.
So this is not Warriors getting counted out, this is both of you get counted out.
Yeah.
So, but he didn't do that. Slaughter just kind of bats his hand and says, "Oh, start again." Slaughter dictates the pace now that Warriors returned, which is a crawl with an eternal bear hug, just like the last match. Mm-hmm. Warrior pumps up but can't capitalize as he sells the lower back, which was targeted by Slaughter with Kevin Nash elbows and kicks. If this is gravity doing all the work, there's no force.
Did you look at Slaughter? He was in bits. State of his hair, mate. Did you see his hairline? Fuck.
The walnut whip. Slaughter slaps on the camel clutch. Illegally, actually, as Warrior's feet are outside the ring. But the ref doesn't see it and actually calls for the bell. So, oh, Warrior quit. But emphatically reverses the decision when he realizes his mistake. You know, Slaughter's like, "Yeah, I've won, yeah, fantastic." And he's like, "No! No! No!" It's like, he can't tell anyone to get out of here, so this is, I'm updating it for 91. Alright, so the finish is when Warrior gets a final burst of adrenaline and pumps up, but Sherry runs to ringside, and despite the ref trying meekly to get Warrior to focus, he drags Sherry into the ring and press slams Sherry out onto the Macho Man.
It was ridiculous. He threw her with a lot of power. Actually, yeah, he really could have hurt her.
Slaughter takes advantage with a running knee to the back. Savage opportunistically smashes Warrior with his massive scepter, and then there is hilarious fart of an elbow drop and a pin, and wow, 1, 2, 3, Sergeant Slaughter wins the WWF Championship.
I'm sure at the time it must have been a fucking shock.
And the crowd gone mild, yeah.
Is this a shock or a disappointment?
Both, yeah.
Disbelief.
It was
disbelief, yeah, that's a good word.
At the time, disbelief. Now going back, relief. Because I have it written here, like, yeah. What a shit title, right?
But, like, yeah. Warrior is a poor main eventer. Slaughter is an average mid-carder.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes. Hopes are not high.
Ultimate puke. Ultimate puke.
You maggot.
Just a point, if Warrior hadn't have been a coward and had accepted Macho Man's challenge, he would have still been WWF champion at the end of this pay-per-view.
Serves you right.
Yeah, damn fucking sweet.
And you probably could have had Sherry as well.
Exactly.
The crowd chant for Hogan, although I can't see anyone's mouths moving.
Yeah, so they're piping in crowd noise to bury the Warrior, basically.
That's so mean. The world champion just lost his belt. New guy. Who's the old guy? Old guy. Come on.
Yeah.
Imagine today if CM Punk lost his belt and everyone's like, Triple H.
Ryback.
You know, there's only one instance ever where people chant Triple H. That's SmackDown versus Raw. They paid a crowd to chant that in that game. Warrior's scarpers to the back as Slaughter is announced as the new champion.
What was that all about? I'm bleeding Morto, so I'm just gonna run off. Like,
he was running after Savage.
I know.
Pile of coats.
This match, now this is a shortcut. Warrior's match is afforded all of the storyline drama and takes the focus off both men's obvious inability to work. Like, this sets up a match with Warrior and Savage, and it's a shame it's not for the title. But to be fair, it was far more interesting than SummerSlam's cage match, so kind of job done, really. You know?
Well, what I want to know is what happens. I'm looking forward to Macho Man's title shot against Slaughter at WrestleMania 7. He was promised.
Oh, so. Yeah. Did he have a title shot at all?
No. He was fibbing.
Fuck me, man.
Telling Porky Pies. Ooh, I don't like this guy.
Yeah, this Slaughter guy.
Yeah. Something a bit honking about him. What was next up, lads?
I'd break questionnaire.
It's time for the Adbreak Questionarium.
What kind of bag is synonymous with Sergeant Slaughter?
El sabor de los nuevos Trident Mega Mystery es...
¡No te atrevas a revelarlo! ¡Y que nadie más lo intente o sufrirán las consecuencias! ¡Rey Misterio te estará observando!
Ya no digo nada.
What kind of bag is synonymous with Sergeant Slaughter?
If you said itty bitty ditty bag, you'd be wrong.
The big shite bag.
Yes! That's it. Perfect. Bucket Dano.
That seems lazier than this. That was a long break. Whoa. It's Dusty and Dustin Rhodes.
Are we not on Coco Beware?
Coco.
Bollocks. You guys are. I'm not because Silver Vision version cut that match entirely. So
that's right, because I did this last time, didn't we?
What last time? Yeah, so I don't have this match, but it was on the WWE Anthology version, which was sourced from the live event. So do you want to run down the card? Tell me about it.
I do, because I'm sure Steve doesn't.
No, I don't. I think I read three lines.
Rightio, so next match up, Coco Beware, and the return of Jacques Rougeau, now the Mountie.
One of the most memorable gimmicks, I'd say, from back in the day. Hogan, Warrior, Jake the Snake, Taker, Mountie. You know, they're the people... Yeah, remember, you know.
Oh, Hall of Famers. Did he have his full-on outfit with the hat and the glasses and the jacket?
He absolutely did. The full-on outfit, the hat, the cut-off jacket, the little mad-shaped pants. The Mountie song, no. He had, like... It sounded like Lance Storm's Un American song. You know, that kind of slightly sinister...
Maybe Vince didn't pay for the Mountie song. Might be a Jimmy Hart creation.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
So how long has he been gone for?
Exactly a year. He left at the 1990 Royal Rumble.
I see. So, do they allude to the fact that he is Jacques Rougeau? Or, I think they're just calling him the Mountie. I don't think they're discussing that he was in the Rougeaus and...
I don't think so.
Yeah, which he can get away probably at this stage. A year is probably long enough to get away with the new gimmick, especially back in the early 90s. Nowadays, he wouldn't get away with it.
But especially because he looks completely different.
He does, but it would be nice, though, to reference the fact that he is from the Rougeaus.
See, these days, even Albert, he hasn't been in the Fed for 7 years, and he's still getting Albert chance. Like.
Well, he's very recognisable. There's not many men in the world that look like him. He is one of a kind.
It's probably worth mentioning that Raymond retired from active wrestling because he had back problems, and Jacques, you're saying he's known as the Mountie here, but... Canadians found it extremely offensive to have a Mountie being portrayed as a heel, so he wasn't allowed to do the Mountie gimmick in Canada. So whenever they went up north, he was Jacques Rougeau.
They take it so seriously.
It's ridiculous.
It's very American of you, Canada.
Rightio, so move on to the match. Coco Beware spends the first half of the match running away. Mountie is chasing him down and he's totally working the crowd up as he's going along. The fans are really big into everything, even though nothing actually happens. And eventually the Mountie backdrops Coco over the ropes and begins to work the crowd again, get some good heat. The match turns quite slow and boring at this point. Eventually Coco makes a quick comeback. He does the flap flap. Unfortunately gets caught and pinned with a sidewalk slam, black hole slam type dealie, and Mountie gets the win. And I have it written down here, he has an awesome song, but it's not the Mountie song.
One of those good squash matches for a pay-per-view debut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Coco's being fed to the Mountie is the right decision because he gets the crowd on his side, so.
And he's popular, yeah, so the win over him means something. It's not like he beat
Coco Beware.
Not that many jobbers at this point in the Fed, actually.
Tito.
Arriba.
Whoa. It's time for DiBiase's interview.
No, we've actually got Sean Mooney interviewing Macho Man Randy Savage, who says that the Warrior was no champ and that he is the best ever. He runs off because the Warrior is banging on his door.
We should realize that no one says no to the Macho King. He was never the World Wrestling Federation champion. I was always the World Wrestling Federation champion. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow, past, present, and future, I'm the greatest of all time. Let him cry. Let him cry. He should have made the commitment to make me the number one contender. Well, now I'm going after Slaughter.
Despite what you might think, I would say the Ultimate Warrior is hot on your trail.
Fantastic.
It was really, really good stuff. Mean Gene interviews Sergeant Slaughter. He has a shitty, shouty promo, and he ends it on the line saying,
I'm the new World Wrestling Federation champion, and that's an order.
No, it's not an order.
That is a statement. Next, we go back to Piper, who's just giving out stink about Slaughter. And showing how much she absolutely hates him. And then up next, we have a group of 30-second promos for the upcoming Rumble. Some of them which are amazing.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. And just prior to that, we have Americans wishing the best to the soldiers. Fuck off.
Did one of them say, like, America is in a war?
And that's an order.
Sorry.
Right, so first we have Jake Roberts, who cuts a good promo. The crux of it is just saying he's coming for Rick the Model Martel. Earthquake next, while doing his Brock Lesnar jumpy thing, just says bring it on to Hulk Hogan. Von Erich, who twirls towards the Rumble. He actually twirls in his promo.
So he heard you.
Yes. This man heard me. Next up we have a Rick Martel promo, which is absolutely fantastic. He just cuts a promo on Roberts again, saying why he's coming after him. Great stuff. Hawk, who states, and I quote, nobody wants to ride me.
And that's a statement.
You don't want to take a ride on either of us.
We'd be like, ah, what a ride.
Then we have Pure Dare in Headlights promo from the British Bulldog. He just looks like he's absolutely shitting himself.
The Royal Rumble, every man for himself. And with 29 other opponents in the ring, I'm glad I'm a Bulldog.
But it's at this point I'd like to bring up my challenge for all wrestlers cutting a Royal Rumble promo. You have to cut at least a 30-second promo without saying the words every man for himself or 29. What's the other over the top or the top rope or over? Those words are not allowed either. You could sift through 30 promos and you might get Hogan, Warrior, Jake. That's about it.
Yeah.
I think Bulldog is the best example. I think he uses them all. Literally 10 of those words in a sentence and then the promo's over.
Oh, so bad. And then the last of this group, we have Tugboat and his fat arms.
What did he say?
Whoop whoop.
Whoop whoop. All right.
Would a tugboat actually make that noise?
Yeah, if it was a steam engine.
Because in my mind, it'd be more like an ooga.
That's if you're honking a woman's breast. That's crazy, because I actually got a different round of promos with some of the same wrestlers and some different wrestlers. So I'll go through them, because it actually starts off with Tugboat, where it's like, I only have two sentences, but I'm going to repeat them into 8 or 10. So he says, life preservers twice, rubber boats twice, and says, everyone go back to port.
That's all right. No.
Then we get, oh my god, I was very sad that you guys missed it, but it'll be in the review. Smash mugs in front of the mirror and the camera. So he's actually like, oh. And we get to see it in stereo because we're looking at the mirror as well.
That's brilliant.
He says that he'll throw Ed Crush if needs be, and goes, he's going to open up this episode.
Awesome.
And then Dino Bravo cuts a Tito Santana level promo. Crush fares no better. Nice mullet. And Perfect says, tonight will be what kind of night?
Presentable.
Presentable night. So Hulk Hogan is backstage with Mean Gene. Typical Americana bullshit. Mean Gene interrupts him, and I thought for a split second he was going to cut off Hogan. Nah, not a chance.
Well, you know something, Mean Gene? Now it's time more than ever for me and all my Hulkamaniacs to unite, brother. You know, there's 29 other competitors in that ring, but I'm not worried about those dudes, brother. I want to tell you what I'm all about and what I'm standing for out here. I'm dedicating this match to all of our boys over there in the Persian Gulf and to all of our allies, Mean Gene. And with that type of firepower, with that type of energy, brother, I don't care about the other 29 competitors, Mean Gene. I'm gonna fight, scratch, and claw my way all the way to the top to win that Royal Rumble. Because with the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marines behind me, Mean Gene, Hulkamania has got more momentum than I've ever had, and I'm gonna prove with all the armed forces behind Hulkamania, truth, justice, the American way, I'm gonna prove that I'm gonna win that Royal Rumble.
Hold on, Hulk, I hate to interrupt you. We are getting, and I can't believe this, an unconfirmed report that the new World Wrestling Federation champion, Sergeant Slaughter, has just defaced the American flag. Now, that could just be a rumor.
Mean Gene, let me tell you something. Sergeant Slaughter stealing the WWF title is one thing. But if Sergeant Slaughter has gone so far to deface Old Glory, to deface the red, white, and blue, brother, I don't care if it's legal or not, brother. Sergeant Slaughter, that would be the fate that would seal you in for good. And no matter what happens, Mean Gene, Sergeant Slaughter's reign as the WWF champion is going to be just like...
I can understand.
You know what, brother?
I know exactly
Sudan
what...
Sudan is going to be just like Saddam Hussein's reign over Kuwait, brother. It's going to be only temporary.
Thank you, Hulk Hogan.
All right, what's next on the list?
Whoa. You can finally do it now.
It's the Monster Mash. It's time for DiBiase's promo where he says he's going after the WWF Championship. He says that Virgil takes his abuse because he bought a bodyguard and a tag team partner, and that match is next. It's Dusty and Dustin Rhodes versus the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase and Virgil. Now, by the end of 1990, DiBiase started demeaning Virgil more than usual, claiming that he could buy off Rhodes Jr. And he was showing it by making an example out of Virgil. So, you know, clean my shoes, clean brother love's shoes, I'm going to step in shit, clean my shoes. And Virgil would get more and more defiant, but he'd eventually comply. Now, just before the pay-per-view, Piper tried to cajole Virgil to quit, and he was unsuccessful. So they went out to dinner, all for naught. Here we go, Dusty and his son Dustin Rhodes. So Dustin's wearing a subtle red, white, and blue cowboy outfit, and they have matching
tights. I don't think
tights.
He can ever wear those three colours and it'd be subtle.
They look quite similar because they have the same bleach blonde hair and like baggy eyes, you know. The announcers put more focus on the degradation of Virgil and how they are above it. They couldn't be bought off. The fuck right off.
Yeah.
How dare you? You're not saying that if a guy with $1 million came around and said, I'll give you, I don't know, 10 grand to clean my shoes. You wouldn't say no. The Mountie has a part-time job. He's also a Mountie, you know. Dustin here is a common man who's, you know, picking up garbage and he's cleaning cars, you know. And it's like, but no, the commentators, they're above it. Okay, in Piper's WWF career, which isn't all that long, he lasted his whole career without jobbing to Hogan, and he's above getting paid money. Guess who went to WCW, got a big payday, and jobbed to Hogan?
Oh, dear.
Anyway, that's a nice rant. Dustin's the old straight, bland, white meat, fired up babyface. He fucking sucks.
Yeah. He's just like a worse version of his outfit in every facet, except for, like, body shape. Less charisma, probably not as good in the ring, definitely not as good as working the crowd.
Hmm. They have an ill-timed father-son, come on, yeah, spot, which is just embarrassing, where they get on their knees and go, pump it, oh, terrible. Later on, they have a pinball elbow spot. Piper chastises Million Dollar Man working over Dustin since he's not at the same talent level. Fuck off, you're in the tag match. What about, what?
So basically what he's saying is that Ted should be fighting Dusty and not Dustin because he's more on his level.
Yeah.
So therefore he's burying two people at the one time.
Mm.
That's amazing commentary, boys, isn't it? Amazing commentary. Yeah. But surely as a heel it's his prerogative to have the easiest match possible, so he should be fighting him.
Hmm?
Like, it'd be right to give out to Dusty for wanting to fight Virgil, because that's the easy way out, and Faye should never take the easy way out, you know? But for a heel, anything is fair game, like, you know?
But as you say, he's burying two people. It was like Triple H around WrestleMania 22 saying, seen as a terrible wrestler.
Yeah.
And then he goes and loses to him.
Yeah.
So what does that make you?
The heels work over Dustin after he misses a high knee into the turnbuckle. Monsoon steals one out of Lord Alfred's playbook, saying Dustin's taking quite a shellacking. Million Dollar Man holds Dustin, but he ducks and Virgil clotheslines him. How would that work if he didn't? You know,
yeah,
you know, if you want to hold something, you hold them to the side.
To the side, yeah.
Not straight on, otherwise he'll just bang his head into your jaw.
Yeah.
Million Dollar Man is understandably pissed and beats up Virgil and dumps him outside. Dusty hot tags in and gets a big head of steam, but misses the elbow and gets schoolboyed 4-3. Holy God, I didn't expect that.
What a massive bury to Dusty there at the end. It's like, it was completely set up. The fucking heels had turned on each other. Ted had just clotheslined Virgil over the top ropes. He was looking the other way. And Dusty still loses.
But did they not try and get over that Dusty was concerned about his son? And injured his...
Well, how about he be concerned for his son by going out to his son and not trying to beat...
Yeah, Dustin's out of the ring.
Yeah. Just really, really bad writing. No one wins in this match. No one wins. We have four fucking losers coming out of this match.
So, just to expand a little on Dusty. So, this is Dusty's final WWF pay-per-view. Within a month, he'd head southwest to Atlanta, where he'd become WCW's wrestler and booker, beating Vader for the WCW title 19 months later.
Come on.
He went out with a whimper, and his run was not a patch on his massive potential, lumbered by, terrible tag and storyline angles. It was the end of Dustin Rhodes as well on pay-per-view, who'd join his dad in WCW 18 months later and fight for the King of the Road with Blacktop Bully in 1995.
Don't splice this in again.
So his tenure in WCW, he would get a tag, any six-man tag title belt run over the next 4 years.
Then he comes back to the Fed, has his Goldust run, gets fucked up on drugs and gets sacked. Puts on loads of weight and goes to TNA. Has this disastrous run as Black Rain.
I know.
It was fantastic.
Come on.
He did have Misty the Arctic Fox, I suppose, which was awesome.
And the bin bag.
Missy Elliott, get your freak on.
I can't stand the rain.
The Black Rain.
Splicey the shit out of that.
Come on.
Him and Missy Elliott. I cannot stand her. Oh my God, what a horrible bitch. So then he gets sacked from TNA because he was lazy and shit like that and they didn't like him.
A coke fiend.
And he's also a coke fiend. And he got signed by the Fed and came back in 2006?
No, later. Like 2009.
Was it?
That's like 19 years after this.
He was in phenomenal shape when he came back to the Fed for his third run.
He must have dropped like 65, 70 pounds.
Oh, he looked amazing. Like...
I'll contend that he looked better in 2009 than he did in 1995.
Absolutely. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And he invented the flying bum tackle. That's a great move. I'm going to throw my arse at you.
Post-match, Million Dollar Man chastises and orders around Virgil, who reluctantly complies. He makes him get the Million Dollar Belt, but Virgil throws down the belt at DiBiase's feet. But the dastardly heel reminds him of his family and his sick mother. Brilliant. Jay Hunter heat here. Virgil bends to one knee as the Million Dollar Man turns around and gloats, and the fans light up when they realise what's going on in Virgil's head and what he's about to do. And he does just that. He smashes the Million Dollar Man with the belt and the crowd go nuts.
I'm sure it's more to do with the hate for the Million Dollar Man rather than any kind of love for Virgil. He's up there with Tito and...
Dustin.
Yeah. You know, he's a charisma vacuum. He's absolutely horrendous. But that just goes to show how great the Million Dollar Man is to generate that kind of crowd reaction.
Mm. I'd actually have it akin to... Do you remember The Miz and Alex Riley, where when Alex Riley turned face, he got a massive reaction. But as soon as he left the feud with The Miz, just...
Yeah.
Dustin.
Yeah.
This ends the 3-year pairing of DiBiase and Virgil. And it's the start of Virgil transitioning from a bland heel bodyguard to a bland babyface wrestler. Yeah, this was a match to showcase the Million Dollar Man's character and Virgil's plight. I expect, thanks to Million Dollar Man's excellent heel persona, that the fans will really get behind Virgil when he wrestles him, hopefully, whenever that may be. But I'd be worried for his career after he moves on from the Million Dollar Man feud.
Can I just ask you a question? Does this match take place at WrestleMania 7?
Don't know, it hasn't happened yet.
Okay, I was going to say, because if it doesn't, fuck this company, like. Because it's clearly building up for it, you know what I mean? Like, Steve,
Steve, I have a good feeling you'll be pleasantly surprised.
That's all right.
And then, right. Quite disappointed.
Yeah, immediately afterwards. Brilliant.
Alright, it is time for the Royal Rumble match. Fink doesn't explain the rules, so the commentators have to. Number one is a jacketless and tag team beltless Bret Hart. I don't like that. If you have a title, you bring it out, mate.
Amen.
Absolutely. Do you drop it at the entrance? Do you leave it on the commentator's table?
Oh, well, there is a valet at it. Like, Barbarian has his cloak and his antlers. He puts it down, someone takes it and brings it back.
Yeah. Yep.
Number two, Dino Bravo. Monsoon says he's a cheapskate who wouldn't spend 10 cents to buy someone else's ticket.
Why would he need a ticket? He's involved.
Who sell their number for 10 cents?
Yeah. Monsoon infuriated me 10 seconds into this match because as Brett and Bravo were locking up, Monsoon blurts out, "In my opinion, neither man can win it." Holy shit.
You are lucky Brett did not hear that.
Yeah, he would have spat in your face.
Number three is the arch nemesis of rugged Ronnie Garvin. It's Greg the Hammer Valentine. Since Honky Tonk Man left before the Rumble, Jimmy Hart's dropped him by default, his face now, and he dumps out Bravo. How about that? Number four, Paul Roma, and Piper exclaims, "Where art thou, Romeo? There I be."
No, I quite like that, I have to say. Yep.
Paul Roma was a fucking roid monster. He was ginormous.
Texas Tornado, number five, is Kerry Von Erich. Man, I thought it was the Warrior when I first saw him. He's been hitting the Ico Pro. Number six, Rick the Model Martel. And then number seven, it's Saba Simba. You can hear the disappointment in the crowd.
This gimmick gets a lot of stick. And, in my opinion, too much. I mean, it's no worse than Kamala.
I'd agree with that.
This guy,
Kamala's worse, yeah. Like, at least the Zulu Nation have some form of civilization and society and laws and rules.
Saba Simba here, we haven't seen him since Episode 4, WrestleMania 2's Battle Royal. He spent the last few years as a homeless drug addict and credits the gimmick with saving his life. He was part of a Ugandan tribe, much like Kamala. And
oh, so he actually was part of a tribe. Okay, so this is not just Vince saw a black dude and said, "I want him to be a fucking Zulu warrior." Like.
Well, he did have a spear, which he chucked.
Well, they probably did that there. Imagine, like, they hunt for food.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, they probably don't, like, brap, brap. You know what I mean? Like, there probably would be some chucking of spears.
In any case, in 1991, it went down really, really badly and they got serious flack over it. He managed Mark Henry in the ECW back in 2008 and played a laughing jackass on the Abraham Washington Show in 2010.
Some of the shite they roll out these days, you know, Tony Atlas and his... that, in my opinion, was infinitely worse.
Tornado slaps on the super claw to Roma and climbs to the second rope, so he gets atomic dropped. Good. Number eight is Butch of the Bushwhackers. The model hangs onto the rope as Tony Atlas eliminates himself as a stupid black man would. Number nine, Jake the Snake Roberts. His eye's grand now, isn't it? he gets a massive pop and he goes straight for Martel, who pegs it out of the ring and smartly attacks Jake from the apron outside. That's brilliant. just as it relates to Jake and his white eye with no pupil. If you were to pour bleach into someone's eye, you would denature the proteins and it would actually semi-look like... Yeah, it would cloud the pupil, so it would look like almost entirely white, but you can't actually get rid of the pupil, so...
Would it recover?
No, you're fucked.
I had absolutely no problem with the Martel from the outside of the apron spot because he hadn't been eliminated yet. He's still part of the match. No problem with it.
See how you feel in a few minutes. Number 10 is the other half of Power and Glory. It's Hercules Hernandez, who immediately helps his mate out. Really odd as Jake breaks up the Brechmals in the corner. All right.
Yep.
It just, like, time stopped for a minute. It was a bit weird. Number 11, the Ariba Man. brother Tito Santana, as Roma stupidly eliminates himself. So there's still 8 left in the ring. It's nice to see the ring fill up. It's quite busy, but there's no spots in this match.
No spots. It's mind-numbingly boring so far.
It's actually getting a little bit too much and nothing is happening and it's really dragging on.
Mm.
So the camera doesn't know what to do. So it's just looking around and, well, there's nothing to see here. Number 12, bong. It's The Undertaker with Brother Love.
I thought it was like Rob Van Dam or something.
Oh. As Magnum TA poses in the crowd. Taker eliminates Brett after about a 20-minute stay.
It's like the safest elimination ever. It's like, well, I respect this Brett fellow. I'm going to let him down nicely, you know?
I was expecting Brett to be in really, really long, you know, like DiBiase last year.
Yeah.
Valentine is in for longer, like, giving that young upstart a good push just to get the career going. Like.
He has just turned face, so maybe he's going to, you know, be Hogan's best mate.
Yeah, another one.
Number 13, murderer. You deserve it.
MDK.
It's Superfly Jimmy Snuka.
And his mustache. Did you see this? Look at the rapist on his lip.
Taker sends Butch over the top rope. Piper describes eliminations as home runs. So I got 5 home runs.
Is that possible?
No, because two...
One per
get a home run, you'd have to clothesline him and he'd have to flip out of the building. 0G mode for like 10 seconds, you know?
So Taker hits a home run, he throws Butch out over the top and then hits all 4 corners and runs home to safety. Number 14 is the British Bulldog Davey Boy Smith as Taker grabs a handful of boogers. Yeah.
What?
He grabs someone by the nose.
Oh, all right.
You see, yeah.
Man, get a load of Bulldog, Roydy McGrew today. He's got his little braids in. Like, that's what a 12-year-old girl gets when she goes to Spain on holidays for the summer, isn't it? Like, you see them all coming back in these little braids.
Or if some, like, mullah girl is up from the country.
Exactly. Like.
Bulldog is back after spending 2 years in Calgary Stampede and AJPW after personal problems with Dynamite split the team. He looks to have put on about 30 pounds of pure muscle mass.
Mm-hmm.
15 is smash. Blah! The model steps outside the ring and then pulls Jake outside and eliminates him and is extremely happy with himself. Jesus, this spot. Number 16 is Road Warrior Hawk. Man, imagine the selling in a match between Hawk and The Undertaker. Number 17 is a tremendous youngster, Shane Douglas.
It's my boy.
Best known for throwing down the Eastern Championship Wrestling title, or the NWA belt, in August 94 and kicking off Heyman's ECW. And this is his only pay-per-view match as he left soon after to take care of his dad.
That's upstanding of him, but I have like number 17 here, Douglas, .. Hate him. Just have no time for him. I think he's just the blandest of the bland. Look.
Yeah, anyone can cut a shoot promo. Yeah, why don't you cut a good kayfabe promo?
Yeah.
He's got a great look. I saw some of his stuff when he was like, you know, the franchise in ECW. I thought he was really... His kayfabe promos are really good then. Obviously, he doesn't work as a baby.
Oh, the fucking white meat baby face. Yeah, it's like the worst job in the world.
Billy Gunn, you know, apricot pants. Like,
Taker ducks a tornado punch and eliminates him, and Hawk cuts Snuka's night short. Taker has an awesome choke spot. Like, he gives the Taker facials, but he's like, oh, you know, that's great stuff. It's one for the highlight reel. So nobody comes out for number 18, but it's hilarious because you can get a glimpse of Animal. just peering out from behind the curtain. Fuck's sake, keep it together, man. Number 19. It's Animal.
What are the chances?
He doesn't know whether he's coming or going.
Monsoon says whoever number 18 is has forfeited his entry. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's proper rules. You get whatever it is, 2 minutes.
You're 2 minutes to come out, yeah.
That's it.
Taker double chokes Legion of Doom, but they get free and the crowd erupt as they double clothesline Taker over the top rope. No time to celebrate, though, as opportunistic heels Martel and Hercules eliminate Hawk. So number 20 is Demolition Mullet. It's Crush! Demolition work over the Bulldog. And now number 21 is Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And there's an awesome excuse me spot. Wrestling.
And the crowd go mild.
Number 22 is Baby Huey, as Piper calls him, Canadian Earthquake with Jimmy Hart.
He gets a good old pop as well. Even though this guy has just been through like a 4 month program of Hogan and has lost every match, he's still over. And he finally has his Richter scale jocks, which are awesome.
Yeah. You would think that was going to tell Vince something. He's still over after jobbing to Hogan multiple times.
Fans still believe this man's a monster and could tear people apart. Yeah.
On Animal's third clothesline attempt, Earthquake ducks and the Road Warrior eliminates himself. Number 23, Mr. Perfect with Bobby Heenan, who saunters to the ring, sons his icy belt. He just doesn't have his belt with him.
Yeah.
Piper says he has 2 minutes to enter. Great stuff. Hacksaw's big head of steam is his undoing as we get a perfect elimination.
Mm-hmm.
Number 24 is Hulk Hogan, and the Royal Rumble properly begins. So it's gut check time, as the model and Valentine have been in for over 40 minutes. So immediately, Hulk Hogan dumps out Smash and locks up with Earthquake. Number 25, Haku. Boo. As Hogan back body drops Hammer out. Number 26, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, as Earthquake sends Tito back to Mexico. Number 27 is Bushwhacker Luke. And he is fucked out by Earthquake. And he continues his bushwhacker bouncing back to It's like, do you remember the 2001 Royal Rumble where Taz comes in and he's like, comes out and he's like, and he gets in and Kane throws him out immediately and he's like still there and he goes back to the hit back. Number 28, it's Brian Knobbs, making his pay-per-view debut, one half of the Nasty Boys, who quietly body-drops Hercules. So the Nasty Boys are in from WCW. They signed in late 1990, so making their pay-per-view debut now.
Another Hogan mate, number 28. You know what I mean? Yeah. It really pays, doesn't it?
Yeah, number 29, The Warlord. Straight to Roddy Magoo, Davey Boy. Oh, man. He should split a prescription. Monsoon tells us it's between Tugboat and Savage for number 18 and number 30. Thanks.
Yeah.
No, we've already bought the pay-per-view. Don't fucking ruin it.
There's only 10 bleeding minutes left in the show. There's no point ruining it now.
Exactly.
Muppet.
Hogan tosses out Crush.
Thank God he fucked out Crush. Did you see how tired this man was? He was doing the Andre and leaning against the ropes, and the second any type of spot or movement is asked of him, he can barely move. He's just so he's still hanging onto the rope, so get him out.
And then Hogan throws out Warlord. Aww. To be honest, Warlord versus Sergeant Slaughter for Mania. Ooh, I don't know about that. Number 30, Tugboat comes out and does his who's and as soon as that, I was like, oh fuck, no Savage. That's two pay-per-views now he hasn't been on.
Yeah.
But it was explained well though, wasn't it?
What did he say?
He's waiting for his title shot, yeah.
Well, he just asked, can I have a title shot?
Oh, he just asked.
Yeah.
Sure,
he had to get Sherry to ask around this time. Yeah.
We don't need to see another Sherry promo.
Oh, God.
That's it. It's opening and closing the show now. Knobs eliminates Douglas. Tugjob gets heat for attacking Hogan and gets thrown back to the pier by Hogan. Meanwhile, Bulldog dropkicks Perfect out, and then Neidhart by tonight's Iron Man, Rick Martel. Haku gets back body dropped out by Bulldog.
By the way, this is the third year in a row that Hogan eliminates his mate.
But this is the first time that he had proper reason to, because Tugboat, in all honesty, the cheeky fucker tried to throw out Hogan.
Yeah, Hogan's allowed you to be friends with him.
Yeah.
That's how you treat him.
So we're down to the final five. It's Rick the Model Martel, the British Bulldog, Hogan's mate Brian Knobbs, Earthquake, and then Hulk Hogan himself. So the model, the stupid heel, goes to the top rope, and Bulldog shakes the ropes and clotheslines him out. Yeah, well done. Yeah. Earthquake and Knobbs, or as he's known, one of the nasty boys. They're not the jumping bomb angels. You know who this dude is.
Yeah, one blonde and one not blonde.
They give Davey a couple of digs and chuck him out. So it's two heels left versus Hulk Hogan. So Earthquake gives us the two-year-old tantrum and the giant whoopsie. And Hulk Hogan sells... Hulk Hogan no sells, just like at SummerSlam.
Yeah, I was thinking, Hulk Hogan sells what?
Hulk Hogan sells merchandise.
Yeah, I think this is the worst of his no-selling ever.
Because he's previously sold for this move. This move put him out.
Yes, and he literally jumps up. Fuck's sake.
It's like, not only did he develop an immunity at SummerSlam, now it like powers him. Yeah. It's like drinking so much that your liver gets stronger. So Hulk Hogan hulks up, he fucks out Knobs, he clocks Jimmy Hart, but Earthquake takes control. Hulk kicks out of a stupid pinning predicament and hulks up, finishing with the "you" admonishment. Punches, big boot, pander, big slam, pander. Clothesline over the top, and the winner, the immortal and the nice guy, the good guy, the young guy, the upstart, Hulk Hogan, the real American.
Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I mean, it was similar to Perfect last year, who was supposed to win, wasn't he?
And
then it was Hogan.
Until the day
you
off.
You know, I mean, give Earthquake the win. He's been losing to you for so long. You could even have Slaughter come in and interfere in some way or distract Hogan.
Mm. Boom.
That would be good on the wrestling CV, you know? And think of previous winners we've had who... We've had the...
Big John Stud.
We've had the Stud Muffin.
Oh, God.
So,
the Muffin.
So why not the Quake Muffin? Did you notice how the arena just starts emptying? You wouldn't see this, you know, 3-4 years ago. Hogan in the ring celebrating. People were literally...
waving flags.
Literally hanging from the rafters. And now they're actually walking out. I think it's fantastic.
Well, the ultimate patriot prevails for the troops. 25 hours later, Hogan leaves the ring and we cut. End of the pay-per-view. What do you guys think of the show?
I thought the first match... the opening tag
match. Which is
match,
what?
The Orient Express versus The Rock. I thought that was an absolutely phenomenal tag team match.
Yeah, myself and you loved it. Steve, you hated it.
I hated it, really.
We said that we were looking at the choreographed spots and not the rest holes, and you were looking at the rest holes and not the choreographed spots. So.
Yeah, so I just thought that was a whopper way to open a show. The Barbarian versus Boss Man was, it was just a big man match. I'm not a big fan of The Barbarian. I think Boss Man's great. Overall, the match
was
okay.
He was very sprightly in this pay-per-view. Mm. He was bouncing around the ring. Very impressive.
I was very disappointed with the world title match between Slaughter and Warrior. I thought it was very poor.
But it was the best that it could have done, given the massive drag factor of both wrestlers. Like, Warrior's not safe, and he gets gassed quickly. And Sergeant Slaughter is old and useless. So they just were afforded every storyline shortcut drama in the book. And to be honest, job well done, but it's very sad.
I just don't believe in Slaughter. I see him and I just see some old guy. I don't believe him for a second that he could beat anybody. And I think Warrior's been a bad champion. So,
you know the way Randy Savage had that very quick match with Dusty Rhodes at SummerSlam? This is like they're trying the same booking technique, but now it's for the world title. And that sucks.
Mm. For a company that's built around its world title, that's not a very clever idea, especially considering that your Rumble is pretty poorly booked as well, you know. I enjoyed the debut of the Mountie. His match was a bit meh, but, you know, I thought he was great. Dustin Rhodes versus DiBiase and Virgil sucked, but the post-match was great, and I didn't enjoy the Rumble one bit. I have very few positives about this Rumble. So, overall, I'd say this is definitely a below-average show. I wouldn't recommend it.
Apart from the Americana BS, you had a very strong roster, so still thumbs up, despite the Rumble being very weak.
I would agree with most of what yous are saying. Is this our fifth Rumble match?
Fourth.
I would say it's probably the worst. I really, really didn't enjoy it at all.
Yeah.
It doesn't help that this Royal Rumble, there wasn't kind of two wrestlers we were looking for, and there wasn't a big spot in the Rumble match. It's not like when Hogan and Warrior were left in the ring together and everyone going, holy shit, what's happening for WrestleMania 6? Or maybe WrestleMania 5 when Hogan eliminated Randy Savage and then they both got in the ring, rah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the big spot and something you can hang your hat on, but there's nothing in this one. You know?
Big letdown. Especially for a Rumble, I thought it was very disappointing. Thumbs down.
It's grand though, Steve. You've got the big one coming next week.
Ah, there were about 80,000.
Over 100,000 people. Over 100,000.
All right, let's take it to the Wrestling is Awesome segment. How about Sable in a would-be porno?
Awesome!
No one is going to look for you. You're crazy.
Thorn! But I thought you were dead.
I am.
Hey, where do you think you're going?
Awesome show, lads. Great stuff. Yeah. No? Yes?
Yes, thank you very much.
Excellent. So, no Saturday night's main event before Mania. This was the final stop. So, we will see you next time for WrestleMania 7. How will the Warrior fare? It doesn't matter, he's not champion anymore. How will Sergeant Slaughter? Can he be dragged to a great match? I guess we'll have to find out next time on OSW Review. So, it's a goodbye from Mr. OC.
Yeah.
V1.
Alright.
And myself, Jay Hunter. And remember, a winner is you. And fuck off, Matthew.
All right. Need more Saba Simba.
Better dodge those spears.
They're Uzis, by the way.
I know, I got it.
2003, yeah, Rina Mara was in some Escape from Lesbian Island.
Nice.
Never been particularly attracted to her. She's always looked old to me.
Yeah, almost plastic and.
And just, you know, back when everyone thought she was hot, I was like, no, I'll have Lita.
Can I have Tori?
You can have Tori.
No, Stacy, I'll actually Stacy, please.
Okay, that's an amicable agreement. Steve, could you get us some kind of deal on the three of them? I'm not paying full price for all of them.
I was like. You and you, yeah, but you definitely dragged the price down.
It's like, what's turning you on right now? Oh, the deal!